presentation materials and turn things over to your very first speaker today. Again, Sonia Sassville, who's the director here at EPA in ORCR's Program Implementation and Information Division.
Okay, thank you, Jean. So welcome everyone to the webinar for CERCLA 108B Financial Responsibility Rulemaking for Facilities in the Electric Power Generation, Transmission, and Distribution Industry. So the purpose of the webinar is to give you an overview of Section 108B of CERCLA, give you a little bit of the history of EPA's actions under the CERCLA 108B, and most significantly, to give you an introduction to the CERCLA 108B proposed rulemaking for the electric power generation, transmission, and distribution industry, which I'm going to refer to as the electric power industry from now on. And that rulemaking proposal was signed by the EPA Administrator on July 2nd, 2019. Here you have an outline just so you can see what we're going to go through. So I'll give you some general background, talk about the history, and then we'll go over the current proposal pretty much in the order that you see things in the proposal itself. And then we'll talk a little bit about tribal and ANCSA engagement and next steps at the end. So in terms of background on CERCLA, the Comprehensive Environmental Response Compensation and Liability Act establishes a comprehensive environmental response and cleanup program. Generally, CERCLA authorizes EPA to undertake removal or remedial actions in response to any release or threatened release into the environment of hazardous substances, or in some cases, any other pollutants or contaminants. It imposes liability for response costs on a variety of parties, including certain past and current owners and operators, generators, arrangers, and transporters of hazardous substances. In terms of background on CERCLA 108B, the statutory language in CERCLA 108B provides general instructions on how to determine what financial responsibility requirements to impose for a particular class of facility. A key purpose of Section 108B is to assure that owners and operators make financial arrangements to address risks from the hazardous substances at their site. 108B1 directs EPA to develop regulations that require classes of facilities to establish evidence of financial responsibility consistent with the degree and duration of risk associated with the production, transportation, treatment, storage, or disposal of hazardous substances. Section 108B2 directs that the level of financial responsibility shall be initially established and, when necessary, adjusted to protect against the level of risk that EPA believes is appropriate based on the payment experience of the fund, commercial insurers, court settlements and judgments, and voluntary claim satisfaction. So that is what drove the analysis that EPA conducted that I'll be talking about. In terms of the rulemaking litigation history, most significant to the additional classes, on February 25, 2009, there was a court order requiring EPA to publish a priority notice to identify the classes of facilities for which EPA would first develop financial responsibility requirements under CERCLA 108B. And then on July 28, 2009, EPA published the priority notice identifying hard rock mining facilities as the first industry that EPA would address. On January 6, 2010, EPA published an advance notice of proposed rulemaking identifying three additional industries for which EPA would develop proposed regulations identifying appropriate financial responsibility requirements under CERCLA 108B. They were the chemical manufacturing industry, the petroleum and coal products manufacturing industry, and the electric power generation, transmission, and distribution industry. You see the NAICS codes for these industries indicated, and that stands for the North American Industrial Classification System. In January 2017, EPA has published a notice of intent to proceed with, did I skip? Okay. So in August 2014, EPA was sued in the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit to require EPA to issue 108B financial responsibility rules for the hard rock mining industry and the three other identified industries. And on January 29, 2016, the court granted a joint motion from the parties and issued an order establishing a publication schedule for rulemaking for hard rock mining and the three additional classes industries. Most relevant to this proposal, the order required EPA by December 1, 2016, to sign for publication in the Federal Register a determination whether EPA will issue a notice of proposed rulemaking on financial assurance requirements under Circular 108B in each of the three identified industries, and it laid out proposal and final dates for each industry for which EPA would decide to do rulemaking. So pursuant to these schedule requirements, in January 2017, EPA published a notice of intent to proceed with rulemaking that stated that EPA had not, at that time, identified sufficient evidence to determine that initiating rulemaking was not warranted, nor had EPA identified sufficient evidence to establish 108B requirements. The notice stated that EPA would enter into the rulemaking process and gather that data, do that analysis, and would decide whether proposal requirements was necessary, and if they were, propose appropriate requirements, or if EPA were to determine that requirements under Section 108B were not necessary, EPA would propose to not impose requirements. So in keeping with the court-ordered proposal date for the first industry, a notice of proposed rulemaking was signed by the EPA administrator on July 2, 2019. The notice concludes that financial responsibility requirements under 108B for the electric power industry are not necessary. It presents the supporting information and analysis that EPA used to reach this conclusion. It proposes to not impose financial responsibility requirements for the industry, but thus it does not include any regulatory text. And it solicits public comment on the proposal and the supporting information and analysis. So the next couple of slides describe the analytical approach that was undertaken by EPA. It basically follows the same principles that were used in the hard rock mining final decision. And basically the approach evaluates the risks by examining records of releases of hazardous substances from facilities in the industry in combination with the payment history of the fund and enforcement settlements and judgments. It considers historical cleanup cases to identify potential risk at currently operating facilities and where taxpayer funds were expended for response action. It assesses the risk posed by facilities operating under modern conditions, that is, the type of facilities to which the financial responsibility requirements would apply, by identifying and considering relevant current federal and state regulatory requirements and financial responsibility requirements, as well as voluntary protective practices. Okay, in terms of the areas of analysis, they include an industry characterization, both industry practices and an economic profile of the industry, cleanup sites analysis, the role of federal and state regulatory programs and voluntary protective practices, existing state and federal financial responsibility programs, and compliance and enforcement history. Now I'll go over the components of the analysis in a little more detail. In terms of the industry characterization, the current industry practices, here this slide provides a description of the industry, NAICS 2211, and it's defined as facilities primarily engaged in generating, transmitting, and distributing electric power. There's a little bit more description following, and the most recent available census data identifies the size of the industry at a little over 10,000 establishments nationally. Next, I'll talk about the economic profile that was done of the industry. The EPA prepared a high-level economic profile of the industry, which includes a summary of relevant financial metrics, market consolidation and diversification trends, industry default risks, and accounting standards for environmental liabilities. EPA found that market structures and typical bankruptcy restructuring in the industry suggested that as a whole, the industry should retain the capacity and fiduciary responsibility to pay the costs of addressing their environmental obligations. Publicly owned utilities subject to rate-setting regulations, as well as federally owned utilities, are less likely to default on liabilities than in other industries. And for investor-owned utilities and those that operate in deregulated markets, bankruptcy code provisions and legal precedents can provide other protections against the discharge of environmental liabilities in bankruptcy. Okay, so next I'll go into the cleanup sites analysis. In evaluating the need for financial responsibility requirements, EPA focused first on assessing response actions at Superfund National Priority List sites and sites using the Superfund alternative approach, and also assessed Superfund removals at non-NPL sites. Additionally, given the small number of NPL and SAA cleanup cases that were found and the consideration of coal combustion residuals or CCR damage cases that were in the 2010 ANPRM, EPA chose to evaluate the potential risk from CCR damage cases. EPA collected information on the timing and nature of releases or threatened releases at the sites, focusing on facility operation end dates, release dates, sources of contamination, NPL proposal dates, contaminated media, types of contaminant, cleanup lead, and information on Superfund expenditures. And it'll be clear the reason for those different types of data that were collected as we go on and describe the analysis. So EPA identified cases where releases had occurred under a modern regulatory structure and releases that resulted in taxpayer-funded response actions. So this included NPL or SAA sites where the pollution incident occurred before 1980, were screened out, and that 1980 was the year that CERCLA was enacted and the initial regulations under RCRA Subtitle C governing the treatment, generation treatment, storage, and disposal of hazardous waste promulgated, since those were very relevant to these types of activities. Using Superfund program data, EPA screened out the potential responsible party lead sites. Then EPA reviewed the remaining sites, considering the site history and pollution sources at the site in the context of the regulations that would be applicable to the facility today. Okay, so the 10 CCR damage cases that remain after the pre-1980 and responsible party lead screening steps were assessed against today's modern regulatory framework. At this stage, EPA found that the releases were all had all occurred prior to promulgation of the 2015 CCR rule, and therefore they were screened from further consideration as preceding the modern regulatory framework for CCRs. The 2015 CCR rule was specifically designed to include requirements that address the risks from coal combustion residue disposal, such as leaking of contaminants into groundwater, blowing of contaminants into the air as dust, and catastrophic failure of coal ash surface impoundments. These are the sources of contamination that were identified in the CCR damage cases. Okay, so next I'm going to go over the tables that, on the next couple of slides, these tables correspond to tables that are in the proposal. So in the proposal, you can see more detail associated with these. Table 1 provides the evaluation results for NPL and SAA sites in the electric power industry. As you can see in the first column, there were five in 2211, five NPL and SAA sites evaluated. and the evaluation found that all five of these were either resulting from pre-1980 contamination or there was a PRP lead for the cleanup. So all five of those screened out at that stage of the analysis. On table two, that covers evaluation results for the CCR damage cases that I mentioned earlier. There were 27 proven CCR damage cases evaluated. And out of those 27, you can see in the second column the number of CCR damage cases that were screened out based on pre-1980 or PRP lead status was 17, which meant that 10 remained. And in the next stage of the review, which was a detailed review, that concluded that they those 10 all occurred prior to modern regulation. And again, that was the CCR rule that was the key factor there. Okay, on the next slide, you see Table 3, which has the evaluation results for the non-NPL Superfund removal sites in the electric power industry. Column 1 shows that there were 24 NAICS 2211, the Superfund removal cases evaluated. Out of those Superfund removal cases, 19 screened out based on pre-1980 or PRP lead status. And a detailed review, as you can see in the fourth column, identified a possible modern release, but in those three cases there were no taxpayer expenditures. Then in the last column, there were two cases remaining that EPA deemed to be modern releases under modern regulation that did require taxpayer-funded responses. EPA did not identify any cases where contamination arising under a modern regulatory framework resulted in significant fund expenditures, and you can see more detail on that in the proposal and background document. The sources of contamination observed at these sites include groundwater contamination from unlined or leaking CCR surface impoundments and landfills, catastrophic failures and breaches of dikes, and collapse of dry ash stacks. Issues observed at most removal sites were legacy PCB and asbestos contamination resulting from the handling and disposal of PCB-containing oil and asbestos-containing insulation materials at fossil fuel-powered electric generation plants. The next step of the analysis was looking at the role of federal and state regulatory programs as well as voluntary protective practices. EPA gathered information about federal and state environmental programs and industry voluntary programs applicable to currently operating facilities within the industry today. From a broad standpoint, EPA found that a comprehensive regulatory framework has developed since the enactment of CERCLA, including federal statutes that are applicable across the entire industry, such as the Clean Air Act, Clean Water Act, CERCLA, Toxic Substances Control Act, and the Resource Conservation and Recovery Act. Additional state regulations address issues related to air pollution, water pollution, emergency planning and response, hazardous substances management, and hazardous and non-hazardous waste disposal and management. In addition, EPA reviewed facility risk management plans, industry materials, government literature, and academic literature to locate voluntary programs and found that the industry voluntary programs can be effective at reducing both pollution and the frequency of government enforcement actions. EPA also looked more specifically at the extent to which activities that contributed to the risk associated with the management of hazardous substances are now regulated. That is, the most prevalent types of releases that were identified in the cleanup cases. In particular, the 2015 CCR rule was identified as addressing the types of risks observed in the CCR proven damage cases. In terms of the PCB and asbestos contamination that I mentioned that were found in the removals analysis, those are addressed by restrictions on manufacturing, use, storage and disposal under TSCA. TSCA also contains regulations providing for the cleanup of PCBs. And in addition, under the Clean Air Act, the Asbestos NESHAP established requirements that apply to asbestos removal, transportation, and disposal practices, and is intended to minimize the release of asbestos fibers during activities involving the handling of asbestos. Okay, so EPA reviewed existing programs that cover a wide range of liabilities. And I'm sorry, I didn't introduce this slide, but this is on the next step of the review, which was looking at the financial responsibility programs within existing federal and state regulations. EPA reviewed existing programs that cover a wide range of liabilities, including closure, post-closure care, corrective action, third-party personal injury and property damage, and natural resource damages. These categories of damages, actions, and costs are like those that could be covered under CERCLA 108B, and thus they help inform the need for CERCLA 108B financial responsibility for this industry. In addition, the existence of financial responsibility or financial assurance requirements can help create incentives for sound practices, reducing the risk of releases requiring CERCLA response action. In this analysis, EPA identified a range of existing federal and state financial responsibility or financial assurance programs that may be applicable to facilities in the industry, and these state and federal financial responsibility programs help reduce risk at facilities where they're applicable. In looking at the regulations, EPA also looked at the compliance and enforcement history, which is, of course, integral. Compliance, assistance, monitoring, and enforcement are important components of the regulatory framework. Compliance monitoring can identify noncompliance at regulated facilities, and enforcement provides legal instruments to assure correction of deficiencies to achieve compliance with environmental requirements. EPA concluded that the compliance and enforcement data and information show that where noncompliance is identified, the preponderance of industry responsible parties are conducting or paying for cleanup, returning to compliance, and improving public health and the environment. So finally, based on all these various analyses, EPA concluded that the degree and duration of risk posed by the electric power industry does not warrant financial responsibility requirements under CERCLA 108B, and thus is proposing to not issue such requirements. EPA did not identify any cases where contamination arising under a modern regulatory framework resulted in significant fund expenditures. EPA also noted, we want to be clear that the analysis and the proposed finding in the proposal are not site-specific. That is, the findings are not applicable to and do not affect, limit, or restrict EPA's authority to take a response action or enforcement action under CERCLA at any particular facility in the industry. The rulemaking record supports the agency's proposal for this class, but a different set of facts could demonstrate a need for a CERCLA response action at an individual site. Similarly, this proposed rulemaking does not affect the agency's authority under other authorities that may apply to individual facilities, such as the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, the Resource Conservation and Recovery Act, and the Toxic Substances Control Act. Next, I know that some tribal representatives signed up for the webinar. We want to go over the potential tribal interests and the interaction that is possible for this rulemaking. CERCLA authorities apply in Indian Country. A final decision to regulate or not regulate electric power facilities under CERCLA 108B would apply to such facilities in or near Indian Country. So EPA encourages tribes to submit comments to the DACA to identify information on existing tribal financial responsibility requirements and any other information that tribes believe may be relevant to the development of the rule. If a tribe believes that they could be affected by this proposed action, EPA invites the tribes to consult with EPA prior to the agency issuing the final rule. The deadline to contact EPA on this is August 16th. We sent letters to tribal leaders, and the contact information to make a request is contained in those letters. You can also look at our TCOTS website and find the letters there and get that information. In addition, there may be interest by Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act corporations. EPA encourages the ANCSA corporations to submit comments to the DACA to identify any information that the ANCSA corporation believes may be relevant to the development of the rule. And if an ANCSA corporation could be affected by this proposed action, EPA invites the ANCSA corporation to meet with EPA by phone prior to the agency issuing the final rule. The deadline to contact EPA is August 16th, and the ANCSA corporations also received letters from EPA with the contact information. So next, this slide includes the rulemaking schedule for the additional classes. This is the court-ordered rulemaking schedule, and as you can see, EPA met the first date for proposal for the first industry by this electric power generation proposal. The second industry is due for proposal on December 4th, 2019, and you can see the remaining proposal and the final date. So this slide covers the planned schedule for the next two classes as communicated by EPA in the spring regulatory agenda. So the petroleum and coal products manufacturing industry was identified as the second industry for EPA to propose, and EPA's plan is to, in keeping with the court-ordered deadlines, make that proposal by December 4th, 2019. The chemical manufacturing industry was identified as the third industry. At this time, EPA anticipates also proposing by December 4th, 2019. And finally, in terms of how to provide comment on the electric power industry rulemaking, a pre-publication copy is available now at our website, and you'll see a demo of that in a moment. We anticipate Federal Register publication soon. It's not something that we can give you an exact date, but definitely keep an eye out for that. And you can see the docket number where the proposal and supporting documentation will be available. The instructions on how to submit public comment are provided in the proposal text. The public comment period will be 60 days from the Federal Register publication date. So the copy that you have now available on the web is essentially an advance opportunity. EPA solicits comment on all aspects of this proposal, including the completeness of our data. And comments should be submitted at regulations.gov, referencing the above docket ID number. So now I'll turn it over to Michael Peace, who's going to show you the materials that we posted.
Thanks, Sonia. Yes, Sonia said, my name is Mike Pease, and I'm at with EPA's Office of Resource Conservation and Recovery, and we just wanted to take a couple minutes to show some of the information that's available currently on our websites and some of the resources on our websites about this rule. So the link in that last slide that Sonia just presented will take you to the Superfund Financial Responsibility page, specifically the electric power section of that page. And the first thing you'll be able to see here is some information, background information, on basically the 2010 ANPRM, which Sonia mentioned a couple times, and also the decision to continue to proceed with examining the need for financial responsibility for these sectors, and also where we describe its plan for the considerations for potentially needing financial responsibility requirements, and from December 2016. There was also referenced in the presentation. In addition to that background, there's a couple very helpful links that we wanted to share, and I will orient you briefly to both of those pages, but first just want to say that this page that the link from the presentation takes you to will remain live, but the at least this right link here, the view, the pre-publication version, this link will change once, as the name suggests, once the rule is actually published. That link will be replaced with the link to the actual Federal Register publication. So real quickly, there's an option to read more about the proposed rule, and that will take you to this page, and it gives you a rule summary. So basically, if you didn't pay attention at all during Sonia's presentation, you could get a two-minute recap, generally, of what the proposal says and why. And also just some of that additional background history. And again, on this page, there's also a link to the pre-publication version of the proposed rule, and that will also be updated, as I mentioned earlier, when the rule is published in the Federal Register. So the pre-publication version of the rule is available on this page currently, and it's the first of these PDFs available on this page. And again, the EPA website will eventually link you to the Federal Register page, but for now, it's the pre-publication version. So you can, if you want more information about anything you heard in that presentation, there's a good chance there'll be information in that the proposal. And there's also, this site gives you a link to pre-publication versions of the primary background documents that include a lot of EPA's thinking on different aspects of the rule and its analysis. And in the future, again, this page won't be available, you'll have to obtain those, the final versions of those documents on regulations.gov, like in the rulemaking docket, and there'll be a link on the Superfund Financial Responsibility Electric Power page to that docket when the time comes. So really quickly, just to give you an orientation of the background documents available, we have, I think, seven of them. The first two speak to what was called the cleanup case analysis and the cleanup site reviews in the presentation. The first of them speaks to the NPL and Superfund alternative approach sites that were reviewed, as well as the coal combustion residual damage cases. So if you have any questions on some of the analytical steps or the decisions made, there's information in that background document. It basically, that describes the process used to identify the cleanup and damage cases that were reviewed. It describes the various screens employed and information considered as part of the review for each case. And it also includes the results of the analysis. So for each site, the reader will be able to understand EPA's determination as to whether the site had the types of pollution or examples of pollution that occurred under an environmental regulatory structure similar to today's that required a taxpayer-funded cleanup. The second background document is the removals background document, and that is actually, it's pretty much analogous to that NPL cleanup site analysis, but specific to the removal site. So it's the same types of information, but for the removal analysis. And then there is the existing financial responsibility regulations and laws background document, and that's where there's the document where EPA presents the state and federal financial responsibility regulations and laws potentially applicable to facilities in the electric power industry. that were identified as part of a broad review of financial responsibility laws. Next, there's the industry practices background document, which basically just provides a high-level review of the industry practices and the environmental profile of the electric power generation, transmission, and distribution industry. And it includes a summary of relevant operational and decommissioning materials and wastes. Next, there is the economic profile of the electric power industry. And the economic profile background document summarizes public data that was collected in the research analysis conducted by EPA with respect to the economics of the electric power industry. It offers a high-level summary of the financial metrics, market consolidation and diversification trends in the industry default risk, accounting standards employed for accounting for environmental liabilities in the industry, and it also reviews individual subsectors within the broader industry, focusing on subsector trends, the universe of potentially regulated entities, and available financial data. Next, there is the enforcement and compliance data, and this is historical enforcement and compliance data, and that background document provides information on compliance assistance, monitoring, and enforcement activities at electric power facilities. Specifically, it presents the findings of EPA's analysis of enforcement compliance data that were obtained from the Environment and Compliance History Online system called ECHO. And for example, it will give you information like the number of cases, the value of the penalties, and the value of recoveries, just that type of enforcement data. And lastly, there is the federal and state environmental regulations and voluntary programs background document. And this is a big one. I think it's over 300 pages, but it identifies existing federal and state environmental regulations relevant to facilities within the electric power generation, transmission, and distribution industry. It describes the industry voluntary programs which electric power facilities may participate in and complement the regulatory regime. It also reviews the available literature on the regulations or the voluntary program's effectiveness at preventing releases and mitigating the harm that may result from the releases. So again, all of that, these documents, the pre-publication version of the rule and those seven background documents are available on this pre-publication notice website, which can be linked to easily off of the Superfund Financial Responsibility webpage that was linked in the presentation. And that does it for the web resources.
Mike, do you want to explain where those documents will be once the rule is published? Hi, this is Charlotte Mooney from ORC.
Oh, yeah. So once the rule is published, all those documents, well, the final published versions of all those documents will end up on regulations.gov and the rulemaking docket, and the docket number, which is helpful to when you're navigating regulations.gov, that docket number is available also on the last slide of the presentation.
And of course, the docket will contain other documents as well. These are kind of the main ones that we thought were the most significant.
Right.
But there is a lot of other material that will be available.
Okay, so with that, we're going to turn to our question segment and try to get through a few questions with the time that we have remaining. So I'm going to start with the ones that have come in already, and I'll do my very best to direct them to the right people to help answer them. And I think I'm going to take this one first. So Charlotte, I'm going to send this question your way, and it's about existing requirements on maintaining financial responsibility. One of the participants is asking if the proposed rule is going to remove those requirements for maintaining financial responsibility for these types of environmental issues that are currently right now applying to the electric utilities industry.
Oh, good. Okay, great. That's an excellent question. No.
So this proposal, if it were finalized, doesn't remove anything that's currently existing in any programs, be they federal, state, et cetera. This proposal is really to just not apply any new financial responsibility requirements to this industry, no new requirements specifically designed under Section 108B. So, for example, if you had a facility that was a RCRA corrective action facility, it was a TSD, a treatment storage disposal facility under the Hazardous Waste Management Program, under that program, it might have financial responsibility requirements to address corrective action or cleanup at that facility under the RCRA program. So this proposal, were it to be finalized, would not impact that at all. Those, any existing requirements that any facility has would remain exactly as they are today, and any future financial responsibility requirements that were to come into play for any facility under these other programs in the future would not be impacted by this proposal at all. There is some information briefly in the proposal and then in the background documents that would be helpful. We were interested in this question particularly as we did the analysis. So there is a background document specifically looking at existing financial responsibility laws that are potentially applicable to facilities in this industry, and I think, Mike, can you help me? That would be the fourth one, the fourth document listed on your website. Yeah, I got it. I found it. So that background document specifically looks at existing financial responsibility requirements, and then, as Mike went over, there's also just some general discussion of all the environmental regulations that apply to all these facilities in the federal and state environmental regulations document. So hopefully that answers the question.
All right, thank you. So we had another comment from one of the participants who say that it sounds like EPA has decided to not propose financial responsibility requirements. And so they're asking if this is going to affect EPA's other authorities under CERCLA to perform cleanups or seek reimbursement from the responsible parties.
Ah, Charlotte again. Okay. Yes, good question, and no. The answer is no. This proposal, again, basically all this proposal would do, were it put finalized, is not add any new requirements under CERCLA 108B. So all the existing requirements that apply to anyone under the rest of CERCLA, requirements to respond to releases, requirements to clean up those releases, responses to or requirements to pay EPA back for cleaning up releases, still remain in effect and are not impacted at all by this proposal, were it to be finalized.
Okay. I think, Charlotte, stay with me. We've got another question I think is going to be yours. So people are asking about the other classes of facilities like petroleum, coal product manufacturing, chemical manufacturing. What does EPA plan to do on regulations for these other classes of facilities?
Okay. So as Sonia went over in the slides, the agency is under a court-ordered schedule for developing proposed and final rules. It was first the hard rock mining industry and then three industries that we had identified earlier. And we chose to do this electric utilities industry rule first, so we got that proposal out. The remaining two industries are the petroleum and coal products manufacturing industry and the chemical manufacturing industry. And so the court order deadlines for those proposals are December of 2019 for the petroleum and coal products and December of 2022 for chemical manufacturing. And then the final rules deadlines come along thereafter. However, in our spring reg agenda, which we publish, twice a year, the spring EPA's spring reg agenda, which lays out the planned timing for rulemaking, we announced that we are planning to get both of those proposals out by the first deadline, which is December 4th of 2019. So I may have confused that a little bit. Let me rephrase it. Our current plan is to get both of those, the petroleum and the chemical manufacturing proposals, out by December 4th of this year. And then subsequently, we would be finalizing all three of these rules, by the court-ordered deadlines. So basically, what we're going to do for those two other industries is do the same thing that we did for this industry, following the analytical approach that we used for the final hard rock mining rule, which sort of set up the approach that we're using for analysis, and that we utilized for this electric utilities proposal. We'll take that same analytical approach, using the same kinds of information, same kind of thought process, and work through the EPA's analysis and conclusions, and then developing the proposals to reflect that.
Okay, thank you. I see one more, Charlotte, that I'd like to send to you before mm-hmm. we move on. This participant mentions that they want to better understand the decision to narrow the cases that were requiring taxpayer funding to those that were under the, quote, modern regulatory framework. That leaves a short time frame.
Ah, okay. Well, basically what we're trying to do is to look at what would be the future if we were to impose any financial requirements under this provision. And so therefore, since it would be affecting facilities in the future, what's relevant for those facilities is the modern, quote-unquote, regulatory framework that they would be operating under. So basically, facilities that are operating under the modern regulatory framework are indicative of the situation that would be in the future, and therefore appropriate to look at for how what the need for financial responsibility requirements would be.
Okay, thank you. I have a question that I think will go to Aaron Miles. Aaron, if you're on the phone, can you come off of mute?
Yep, I think I'm off. Can you hear
yep.
me?
Yep, we can. Thank you. So, Aaron, this question is asking, what is the current status of the litigation against EPA's decision on the hard rock mining industry?
Okay, thanks. Good question. The hard rock mining litigation is still pending before the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit. Oral argument was in March of 2019, and we are awaiting it. So we don't have a decision, and we're waiting at this point for that.
All right, great. Thank you, Aaron. I think our next question, Mike, I'm going to send this one back over to you. And so this question is about nuclear power facilities, and they would like to know if nuclear power facilities were also included in this rulemaking proposal.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, and I guess the short answer is, yeah, it included the whole electric power generation, transmission, distribution industry, which is a variety of types of power generating facilities. So when we wanted to look at like where the damage cases and cleanup cases were to review, any nuclear power facilities would have been included in that universe of facilities. And likewise, when looking at like existing financial responsibility laws, like the NRC's programs were considered, for example, that relate to electric power generation facilities.
All right, great. Thank you. I see another question in here. Peggy, if it's okay, I'll send this one over your way. Someone is asking, when is the expected publication date in the Federal Register?
Another good question.
We don't know when the Federal Register is going to publish it, but we do know that they've concluded their review, so we expect it to publish soon. That's the best answer I can give, unfortunately.
Okay, thank you. Charlotte, I'm going to go back to you with these next questions. This next one is about the states. So the attendee wants to know if the states are going to impose financial responsibility requirements on their own.
Well, in short, that would be up to the states. So EPA does its analysis based on the federal picture and the analysis across the class and across the industry. So we did a broad look at the national picture and compared it to the requirements under the statute. So that is what we look at, but states, of course, are welcome and free and due to look at their particular situation as they see fit. And I think I mentioned earlier, there definitely are some states that already do have some financial assurance or financial responsibility requirements for some facilities in this industry. And again, there is a background document because, again, this is an interesting question for us that goes over any existing state requirements for financial assurance. So that would be a good place to look to see the kinds of things that states have done up till now. And certainly states could choose to do any type of financial responsibility requirements that they thought were appropriate going forward.
Okay. Charlotte, how does EPA plan to decide whether they're going to regulate additional classes?
Oh, I think I pretty much answered that one earlier. We are going to go ahead and just use the same analytical approach that we developed in the hard rock mining rulemaking and then applied, I think, a little bit more systematically in this proposal. We were able to take a good look at how to go about doing this analysis, and we laid it all out, I think, pretty clearly in the proposal. So we will be following that same analytical approach for the next two industries, petroleum and chemical manufacturing.
All right.
And, you know, Jean, actually, there are a couple of points I thought I should make about what the purpose of our webinar here is, because we're getting some comments in the question box or whatever it is, and I just want to make it super clear that this is not an opportunity to provide public comment on the rule, as much as we would love to do that right now. The public comment period starts officially on the date that the Federal Register notice is published, and I think it's 60 days, is that right, Peggy? It'll be a 60-day
public
comment period. And just so you know, it's very important that you specifically follow the instructions in the Federal Register notice for publishing comments. People sometimes think they can send them to me or to Sonia. Or even to Jean.
Which is fine, as long as they also submit
right.
them to regulation studies.
Exactly. So the comments, in order to be, you know, officially received comments on the proposal, they need to go in through the docket following the procedures that are laid out pretty explicitly in the Federal Register notice.
Okay, so it does look like we are reaching our scheduled end time for today's session. I just want to be respectful of everybody's schedule. So I think just to be sure that we reinforce that last key point, Sonia, can you remind the audience, if they have comments, what do they need to do on this proposed rule?
Okay, so if you have comments, you need to go to the docket and submit them. And the instructions for doing that are in the proposal, it's basically the very first section. So that's just really important to do, because that gets them officially tracked, makes them official comments. So very important. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. So with our last minute, I'll just walk through a few final reminders for the audience. The first thing that I want to do is thank the 130 of you who joined us for today's live broadcast. We appreciate you joining us on today's session. A number of you were looking for copies of the presentation material. They are already available to download from the seminar links or resources page. So you'll find that on the middle right of your screen under related URLs. I would also ask each of you to take just a moment to fill out our online feedback form to let us know what you thought of today's delivery, both in the content and the tool that we used to deliver the presentation. One of the most common questions that I get as a host is if we offer credit or certificates. While we don't offer credit, we can give you a certificate after you fill out that feedback form. Just make sure you check the box at the bottom confirming you were here for the entire broadcast, and then as soon as you send your feedback in, you'll immediately have access to download or print out a certificate. For those of you who joined together from a group in one room, each of you can fill out that feedback form, whether you registered or you simply attended with another registrant. You just need to get the link to the feedback form from the person who registered. And so with that, I'll remind everybody that today's session was recorded, and you'll receive an email as soon as that recording is available for on-demand playback. This will be the formal conclusion for today's live broadcast. Thank you so very much for joining us.